All right, so we are holding on Chaf Beis Amud Aleph, fifth line. So again, to recap then, we said we had Chizkiya and Rav Abahu giving us different ways of knowing that Chometz is also B'hana'ah. We're actually going to learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem, that Rabbi Yisiak really disagrees with the whole premise and says Chometz is Mutar B'hana'ah, it's only also B'achila, but according to everybody else who says it's also B'hana'ah, we had Chizkiya learning it from the fact that it says Lo Ye'ochel Chometz, Chometz shall not be eaten, meaning that any kind of Hana'ah that even conceivably could lead to money for food is Osir. And according to Rabbi Abahu, rather, it's not something specific to chametz. More generally, when the Torah tells us about anything, you're not allowed to eat it, means it's also b'hana, unless it specifies otherwise, like it does by nevela, or as we said, like it does by trefa, according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Abahu's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, as it does by trefa, where it says lakelav tashlichu noisei. So now we're going to go through a whole bunch of different isurim in the Torah. We're going to go throughout the rest of today's daf and into tomorrow and into a good chunk of tomorrow's, where we're going to be going through various isurim, various things in the Torah that are also to eat. And we see that they're mutar b'hana. So how does that, how we're going to have to see how each one of them fits with Rav Abahu's rule. So the Gemara asks, Masiv Rabbi Yitzchok Napcha, Vare Gid HaNosha. Consider the Gid HaNosha of an animal. The pasuk says that the Jewish people do not eat the gid hanasha, and that's not just saying a nice thing that we're not allowed to. It means it's actually osur. It's an actual isur. It's an actual lav in the Torah, equal to any other lav, and a person is chayav malchus for it. Utnan. Yet we learn it. Yet we learn in a Mishnah in Cholin, sheleach adam yerach lanochri. A person is allowed to send a thigh of an animal to a goy as present, the gidan nosha b'seichay, with the gidan nosha inside it. Because we don't have to be concerned that a Jew might see the first, that another Yid might see the first one giving it to the goy, and then he's going to go buy it, figuring it's kosher to meat, I might as well, and not realize the Gid HaNosha has been taken out, because where the Gid HaNosha is located is very noticeable. So therefore, the second Yid, even if hypothetically he goes and buys it from the goy, he's going to realize right away, this has the Gid HaNosha in it, and know to take it out. The point is, though, that we see that you're allowed to have hana from the gid hanasha because you're giving the whole thing to a goy as a present. And b'chlal, I mean, we talked yesterday about that you're not allowed to give them matnas chinam, but we said if it's your neighbor, for example, then in effect it's the equivalent of selling it to him is one example because then he's going to owe you a favor and then eventually he's going to pay you back in some other way. So it's not matnas chinam. The point is, though, that you're having hana from it. So the answer is kasavar Rav Abahu kshehutra nevela. The answer is like this: Rav Abahu holds when the Torah tells us nevela is mutter, which we said yesterday it is, because the Torah says you can give it to a ger toshav or sell it to a goy or according to a mayor, you can also interchange those two. So the nevela is mutter. He v'chelba v'gida hutra. All of it is mutter, bana, including the chelev and including the gid anosha of it. So once we say that the good morning, Ellie. Once we say that the gid anosha of an animal of a nevela is mutter, we can't very well say the gid anosha of a nevela is mutter and the gid anosha of a regular shechted animal should be osur. Obviously, the Torah wants us to understand that a gid anosha in general is mutter bana. Together, just like the whole rest of the nevela would be, and in this case, just like the whole rest of the shechted animal would be. The problem with that is that only works out now. You have a machlokes in Chulin there whether we say that the gid anosha or gidim in general have a flavor in them. So this is relevant if you cook the gid anosha with other meat, whether the other meat becomes osur. But you have different opinions about that, whether it has noisin tam or not. Now, isn't that a machlokes in metzius? Just give it to a goy to taste and find out. So there's a couple of answers. One of the answers is, in fact, the Gemara discusses there in Cholin that maybe if we say that the gid itself has no flavor, then in fact not the main body of the gid itself is what would be osur, but rather only the branches, the smaller branches of the nerve that branch off, where those are more edible and those have a taste. So then maybe, so in other words, we would say the machlokas would be, is the main body of the gid osur as well as those branches, or only those branches? Another way of understanding it would be that I think Rashba talks about, it does have a slight flavor to it. But the question is, how significant is that flavor considered in halacha? It's not the kind of thing you can have a goy taste, because sure, he'll report it has some kind of flavor, but is that enough of a flavor to be considered something in halacha? Anyway, the point is, if we say yesh begidin menois and tam, then sure, gidin are like any other meat. So like we said, once the Torah says a nevela is mutar b'hana, automatically all the meat in it is mutar b'hana, including the gidin anasha. El olamad ha'omer ein begidin menois and tam. But if you say that gidim have no flavor to them, so then it's not, so then in other words, the fact that the gid b'chlal is also to eat is gzeres ha'kosur, because usually you would say it's like a piece of wood, there's nothing in it to be osur, and yet the Torah is asuring it. So then you can't say that it's included in the general heter of the that's included in the general heter of the nevela. You would say, okay, the Torah is matir and nevela, the Torah is being matir you to sell or give the edible parts of it to a goy. Where do we see the gid anasha would be included? So maybe in fact the gid anasha should be osur, but we know that not, because that mishnah that said that you're allowed to send it to a goy seems to be according to everybody. The answer is man shamat le da'omer ein begidin menos in tam, Reb Shimon. You know which opinion says that gidim have no flavor, and therefore on the face of it that they should be osir, that would be Reb Shimon. The Tanya, ha'oichel begidan nosha shel behema tmeya, as we learn in a braisa, that if a person eats the gidan nosha of a non-kosher animal, Reb Yehuda mechayev shtayim, Reb Yehuda is going to be mechayev him double malchus, number one for the fact that he ate from a non-kosher animal, and number two that he ate from the gidan nosha. In fact, you have an argument there in Chulin. Reb Yehuda argues, b'chlal, that the whole concept of gidan nosha applies equally to kosher and non-kosher animals. And Rabbi Yehuda points it out, because after all, when did the Gid Anosha first become Osir? When to the sons of Yaakov, after the fight with the Malach. At that point, they still had the din of Bnei Noach. And they didn't have the din yet that they have to only eat kosher species of animals. So therefore, obviously, the Isser was on all species. Whereas the Chachamim counter over there and say that no, even though the Pasuk is written in Parashas Vayishlach, it was actually only given when the Torah was given to Moshe. It was only that Pasuk was only composed when the Eibishter gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu and told them to put that Pasuk in. So it wasn't actually Osir to them before they became Jews, before Matan Torah, and therefore they say it applies to only kosher animals. Anyway, the point is, so Rabbi Yehuda would say, then again, that he's chayav double malchus. Number one, because he ate from a behemoth tmeya, and number two, because the gid anasha has a flavor, and therefore it's like any other meat of a nevela that a person might eat. And it's gid anasha, so therefore double malchus. But Reb Shimon poter. Reb Shimon says, on the other hand, he's poter because he says the concept of gid anasha applies only to a behemoth tahor, like the other chachamim say. He also says that you can't be chayav for the fact that it's a behemoth tmeya. You also can't be, so you can't be chayav for the fact that you ate meat from a behemoth tmeya, because not meat, it has no tam. You can't say you're chayav for gid anasha because gid anasha only applies to behemoth tahora, so therefore no malchus at all. So Reb Shimon is the one who says that it has no tam, and in fact, Reb Shimon hachinami da osav hana. As a matter of fact, Reb Shimon would say that the gid anasha is in fact osav hana. So this mishnah that we quoted before, sheleach adam yerach anachri, would not be according to Reb Shimon. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Gid Anosha Mutar B'Hana Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says the Gid Anosha is Mutar B'Hana. Therefore, for example, you're allowed to send a thigh to a goy with the Gid Anosha in it. But Reb Shimon Oisa, whereas Reb Shimon says it's Osir. So yes, so in fact, according to Reb Shimon, the answer would be that in fact it is Osir, as the usual rule goes that whenever the Torah says don't eat something, that includes an Isur Hana. Rabbi Yehuda, who says yesh begidin menos in tam, would say it's included as part of the flesh, and therefore once the Torah is matter the nevela, then automatically the gid anasha is mutter with it also. No, Rashi says it has a certain flavor before you cook it as well, but that's not the point. The point is fine. So you cook it, and then you ask a goy to taste it. But the point is, in other words, the point of Rabbi Yehuda, it has no tam, at least not that's significant in halacha at all. Tosfos actually asked the question, so knew what is Chizkiyah going to do with Reb Shimon's opinion. Chizkiyah, who said that only by chometz do we say it's also b'hana, because it says lo ye'ochel. Usually something that's also to eat is mutar b'hana, according to Chizkiyah. So how is he going to understand Reb Shimon's opinion? So he gives, so Tosfos gives a couple of answers. One of them is that maybe that if we say ein begidin menos in tam, then obviously it's not something the Torah is telling you not to eat, because not really relevant to eat it anyway, since it has no tam. Necessarily, therefore, the Torah must be telling you about having hana. Or you could just say, okay, that Chizkiah is saying what my opinion would work only according to the Yehuda. And we had before with the matter of Nevela, where also Chizkiah's opinion doesn't really work according to the mayor so easily. It works better according to the Yehuda. Fine, but when you have a Machlokas Tanoim, then an Amorah like Chizkiah is entitled to pick a side. There is an interesting question in the end. So Lamaskana, is the Gid Anoshim Mutar Bahana or not? So it's interesting. Based on the Gemara over here, it should come out that if we say that only if we say Gidin have a tam, only then would we say they're mutar b'hana. If we said ein b'gidin menos in tam, then we're saying according to Reb Shimon they should be also b'hana. Now on the other hand, the Rambam paskins that on the one hand ein b'gidin menos in tam. Therefore, for example, if you cook the gidan nosha with other meat, then the other meat doesn't become also, unless if you have the fat around the gidan nosha, that's different because that's also the rabbanon. But the gidan nosha itself can't aser other meat that it's cooked with because it has no tam. On the other hand, he also paskins that the Gid Anosha is mutar b'hana. How does that fit? So one answer is maybe we're talking only over here according to Rabbi Bohu. Chizkiah disagrees with the whole premise. The Rambam could be paskining like Chizkiah. It's also possible later on we're going to be mentioning possibilities that even according to Rabbi Bohu we have other ways of learning that that the Gid Anosha is mutar. It doesn't necessarily. Have you tasted? What do you mean? It tastes just like meat. Have you? When's the last time you tasted a Gid Anosha? The Gid Anosha is a nerve. So does a thick nerve like that that runs down the leg, does it necessarily have tam basar? Not necessarily. That's the point.
Where do we see
it? It's hard to take it out. Right. Therefore we. Right. Yeah. What?
Who says that we apply the Gid Anosha to everything else, number one? And number two, where
one
do we
second,
take
we
it?
Apply the Gid, 1 second, what do you mean we apply the Gid Anosha to everything else? The question was, the Torah says you're not allowed to eat the Gid Anosha. We know it's mutar b'hana. How does that fit with Rabbi Bohu's rule? So the answer is because if we say ein begidin benois in tam, if we say it's not considered meat, or if we say yesh begidin benois in tam, then it's included in the heter of nevela. Only if we say that ein begidin benois in tam, then you're right. Then you're right. We would have to say that it's also b'hana, which in fact is what Reb Shimon says. What do you mean? How can we learn the same way as we learn by any binyan av? Where the Torah tells us one thing, we derive from it from everything else, unless we have a reason not to.
So why does the Torah say that specifically for Gid Anosha? The Torah should say it for everything else.
That's the thing. The Torah is saying by everything. Each Issur Hanah, according to Rabbi Bohu, the Torah is telling us, lo seichlu, or lo ye'ochel, or whatever, and it means an Issur Hanah, unless we have a reason to say otherwise. So in the case of Nevela, we had a reason to say otherwise because it said that you can give it to a Ger Toshav or sell it to a Goy. In the case of Gid Anosha, if we say yesh begidin benos in tam, then it's automatically included in the heter of Nevela. And if we say ein begidin benos in tam, then you're right. In fact, according to Reb Shimon, it would be osur. And now we're going to go through one by one various other isurim where the Torah tells us don't eat them, but you see you're still allowed to have hana from them and see how they fit with Rabbi Bohu's rule. That's exactly what we're going through now. Anyway, I was going to mention an interesting thing.
Where does Rabbi Bohu take it that an Isur Achila is an Isur Anah?
Rabbi Bohu takes as a general rule that when the Torah tells us don't eat something, automatically it includes an Isur Anah unless the Torah specifies otherwise. The very fact that, for example, by Nevela, it had to specify otherwise implies that usually it would be also. So usually something is also b'achila, it's also b'hanah, unless otherwise specified. That's Rabbi Bohu's rule.
So he takes it from Nevela.
So an interesting point then is, so again, so the Rambam holds that the Rambam holds, and so does some other Rishonim, that Gid Anosha is ein begidin menos in tam, but yet it's mutar b'hana. So one way of reconciling that is to say that the Rambam maybe agrees with Chizkiah, not with Rabbi Bohu's rule. There's other answers as well. There is an interesting point. The Beis Yosef brings this, and then he says, according to Nigla, it should be mutter, but according to the Zohar, the Gid Anosha is also b'ana, and you should be machmer on that. Comes the Rama in Darchei Moshe and says, what are you talking about? You know who wrote the Zohar? Reb Shimon. We're saying over here in the Gemara, Rav Shimon says it's also. Fine, why should we have to be machmir like him? If we said the halacha is not like him in Nigla, why all of a sudden, just because he says it again in the Zohar, should the halacha be like him? And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef apparently agreed when he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, and just says flat out that it's mutar b'hana without mentioning anything about the Zohar. Okay. Next. Vaharei dom. Now, let's look at another case. Let's look at blood. The pasuk says you're not allowed to eat blood. Utnan. Yet we learn in a Mishnah in Yuma, elu ve'elu, both types of blood. Now you have chatois apnimius, where the blood is sprinkled inside the heichel, and then the kohen would take the remainder of the blood, the shirei hadam, and pour them, like we say in morning davening, avisod ma'arovi shomis bechachitzen, on the west side of the yisod, and they would flow down the holes over there that are in the southwest corner. Then you have the blood of the shirei hadam of other korbanos, the ones with the achatos and the ones where you do shtei matana shrein abra, and all of those are poured avisod droimi, on the south side of the Yisod, or actually the southwest corner, which is where the holes are. Whatever the case, Elu ve'elu, both types of blood, Miss Arvin ba'ama, they both mix together in the Amma, which is the water channel that flowed through the Azara. V'yotzim the Nachal Kidron, it would all flow out into Nachal Kidron, in the valley, the Kidron Valley, which is east of Yerushalayim. V'nim korim laganonim lezevel, they would sell it to gardeners to use as fertilizer for their fields. Umoyel and boy, and me'ila applies to it. In other words, you're not allowed to have hana unless you pay hektish. The point is, we see it's mutav hana. Now, this that we're saying moylan behen, Tosfos mentions over here, and so do most other Rishonim learn, that it means it's only dirabbanan. Because you have a rule in the Torah, you have a rule that Gemara mentions in some places, any time the mitzvah was accomplished with something of hektish, then ne'ila doesn't apply to it anymore. Here, the mitzvah with the blood is to sprinkle it on the mizbeach, or to sprinkle it inside the heichel, wherever it's supposed to go exactly. Once you poured it on the yisod, the mitzvah has been accomplished. At that point, ne'ila shouldn't apply to it anymore. So most of them say that it means dirabbanon. The Chachamim imposed, the Chacham didn't want that the gardeners should just be using it for free. You have to pay hektish for it. But yes, if a person did use it illegally, he wouldn't be chayav a korban. There are some of the Rishonim who say that maybe what it is after it goes out to Nachal Kidron, then based in his makdash it again. It still belongs to the Beis Mikdash after all. So therefore, before anybody can collect it, based in has in mind to be makdash it again with kedushas domim, with a kedushas bedek abayis, and therefore if a person uses it without paying for it, then they'd be chayav me'ilu daraisa. Because it was holy, but then it was used for the mitzvah. Now it lost its kedusha. Now in the davish nasas mitzvah say umoylin by. Yeah, you can say yeah. You can make any. Yeah, well it is yours. Right now it's hefker. So Beis Din can be zoche in it again, and Beis Din is zoche in it again. Nobody else was zoche in it yet, and they can say. But the majority of Rishonim though learn that we're just talking to Rabbanon. Anyway, the point is we see though that you're allowed to have hanah from it. Now, one way of understanding it is the fact that the gardeners are able to use it, even though that's hana. Another way of understanding is the fact that the Beis Mikdash itself is allowed to sell it, that Hekdash is allowed to sell it to these gardeners, even though that's a hana. So whatever the case, we see you're allowed to have hana from blood. One difficulty with all of that is that it's a hana, it's not a usual way of having hana from it. Later on in the parak, we're going to talk about that even things that are also hana, many times you're allowed to have hana from it in an unusual way. Chametz is an exception to that, but most things that are also hana, you're still allowed to have hana from them in an unusual way. Isn't it an unusual way? The usual way of having hana from blood, for example, would be eating it, and here not. So in fact, the Pnei Yeshua says that one point is, if it remained osav hana, then how would the gardeners be able to use it to grow vegetables, let's say, where you're using something that's osav hana to grow? Fine, the vegetables might be mutter on the grounds of zev zeh gerdim, because you have the fertilizer, which let's say is osir, and the ground, which is mutter, combining together, but you're not allowed to do that l'chatchila. So the fact that we see that you sell it to them for fertilizer and they use it for that purpose shows that blood is mutter b'hana. So according to Rabbi Bohu, how does that work out? The answer is shiny dam de itka shlamayim. The difference is that blood, there's a hekesh between it and water. As the pasuk says, don't eat the blood, pour it out on the ground like water, meaning ma mayim mutar mafdam mutar. So just like water is mutar b'hana, so is blood. And ain meshivin al a hekesh. You can't refute a hekesh because it's one of the things that you can't make a hekesh by yourself. It's like a gzeirah shava and like all other ones where it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So therefore, that's it. So there's no arguing against that. So this hekesh, yes, it's learned ish m'fiish back to Moshe Rabbeinu. The problem with that is, who says we're comparing it to regular water? Tosfos points out, we did learn in the previous perek that blood of kodshim is different because it's not nishbach kamayim. We said that usually blood is mashal kabal tumah, but blood of kodshim is not because it's not poured out. It's meant to be sprinkled on a mizbeach. But again, the point is, that once we see that the Torah is telling us that certain blood is mutter, namely blood of chulin, that is mutter b'hana, then again, you can't say one type is mutter b'hana and the other type is aser. It has to be that it's across the board. Yeah, that's the context of it. It's talking about regular chulin meat, right? But the point is, we're not going to say that on the other hand, blood of kodshim remains also b'hana. Once the Torah is telling us that there's a certain kind of blood which is mutter b'hana because it's like water, then it applies across the board to all kinds of blood as well. The question is, how do you know it's comparing it to water which is mutter b'hana? Maybe it means like the water that's poured on the mizbeach. Now, okay, the water that's poured on the mizbeach is not also b'hana. But Tosfos says, after all, and you know, the very fact that it says loy soichal, that it says that you're not allowed to eat blood, according to Rabbi Bohu's rule, would automatically tell us it's also b'hana. The point is, you want to say because it's compared to blood to water, therefore it's mutter b'hana. Maybe not. Maybe the comparison is the water that's poured on the mizbeach. So there's no proof that it's mutter b'hana. It remains also b'hana. Like it remains also b'hana under the rule under Rabbi Bohu's rule of loy soichal. That's the question. How do we know? The answer is, Amar Rabba Bohu, so Rabba Bohu himself answers, Kamayim, when it says like the water, Kamayim is like Kehamayim, means like the water, meaning Roiv Mayim, meaning most water in the world. Most water in the world is not poured on the Mizbeach, so therefore the comparison is to most water, and most water is Motabana. Let's see what he's still, Midi Roiv Mayim Siv. Okay, but the positive doesn't say most water, maybe it means like the water, which is poured on the Mizbeach. Ella, Omer of Ashi, Kamayim Hanishpochin, Velo Kamayim Hanisochin. Rav Ashi says, the comparison is, the Pasuk doesn't just say that blood is like water. The Pasuk says you should pour it out on the ground like water, meaning the Torah is comparing blood to water which is poured out on the ground, Velo Kamayim Hanisochin, not like water, like water which is spilled out on the ground, not like water which is being poured deliberately on the Mizbeach. There's a difference between Shofach, which just means to spill something indiscriminately, versus Nisuch, which means to pour it deliberately into the basins, into the holes on the top of the Mizbeach over there. So the Pasuk, therefore, is Dafka comparing not to the water of Nisuch HaMayim, because it's comparing to water that's spilled out on the ground. So the question is, maybe say, though, on the other hand, maybe the Torah is comparing blood to water that's poured in front of Avodah Zarah, which, like anything that's offered to Avodah Zarah, is also b'hana. The answer is Hosam Nami Nisuch Ikri. Well, again, the question is not necessarily that we should say that because of that blood is Osa B'Hana. According to Rabbi Bohu's rule, blood should be Osa B'Hana regardless. Just the fact that it says Loi Seichal, Loi Seichlanu, automatically should make it that blood is Osa B'Hana. You're trying to prove that this should be an exception to the rule because it's like water. But maybe the comparison is the water that's poured in front of Avodah Zarah, and therefore we're back to that it's also b'hana, like the implication of the words lo yisechlanu. Where are you getting the fact that it's mutter b'hana? If you're going to say it's like water, then not necessarily. It could be compared to water of Avodah Zarah. The answer is hosam nami nisuch ikri. The answer is blood that's poured, water that's poured in front of Avodah Zarah is also called nisuch. It's not called shvicha. Dichtiv yishtu yein nesicham, as the Pasuk says, they drink the wine that they poured as libations to Avodah Zarah. So we see that both by Avodah Zarah and Lahavdo, by the Beis Mikdash, it's both called nisuch. It's a deliberate pouring rather than an indiscriminate spilling. So if the Torah is comparing blood to water that is spilled, then that can't be in Beis Mikdash. It can't Lahavdo be in front of Avodah Zarah. It must be regular water, which is mutter b'hana. So now the question becomes, so now we have to ask, according to Chizkiyah, Lamai, so all this is according to Rav Abahu. That according to Rav Abahu, usually things are osa bahana unless the Torah specifies, therefore you need this hekesh, and this hekesh tells you that blood is muta bahana, even though without that you would have said it's osa bahana. Rav Abahu is the one who said that in general, whenever it says loy soichal or whatever, it means it's not just something specific to chametz. Rav Abahu said in general, anytime the Torah says something is also to eat, automatically it's also bahana, unless we have a limud to the contrary. That would Chizkiyah is the one who says from loy yachol. So that's the question. Ula Chizkiyah l'may hiuchse itkesh dam l'mayim. So according to Chizkiyah, what is this hekesh between blood and water telling us? According to him, you don't need it because blood is already mutter b'ana anyway, since it doesn't say about it, lo ye ochel, it says lo techlenu. So that would mean you can't eat it, but you can have other hana from it. Now, Rashi explains, up until now, the Gemara hasn't asked on Chizkiyah, because when we mention the thing of Nevela, we didn't have to ask, according to Chizkiyah, what is the words by Nevela that you can sell it to a goy or give it to a ger toshav, because that's exactly it. Chizkiyah would say, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir each have their ways of understanding why we need that, in order to tell us that you can do either one, you can sell or give to the goy or to the ger toshav, or according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can davka, give to the ger toshav or sell to the goy. So there's no reason to ask, according to Chizkiyah, what is the pasuk accomplishing for us? Then when it came to Gid Anoshe, we asked and we said, it was actually the Gemara didn't ask what Chizkiyah is going to do with it. Tosfos brought up the question and said that maybe Chizkiyah, first of all, maybe Chizkiyah doesn't agree with Reb Shimon, and also if there's no nois and tam, then maybe it's a svara that it's not that it would be mutar b'hana. So that would be also b'hana as the case maybe. Anyway, but now that we're saying there's a hekesh to tell us that blood is mutter, then we have to ask, according to Chizkiyah, Chizkiyah agrees with that hekesh, so what does he do with it? According to him, blood is mutter, it's extra. According to him, blood is mutter b'ana already, because it doesn't say yachol. The answer is l'chidr Rav Chiya ba'aba. The answer is Chizkiyah would say that hekesh teaches us what Rav Chiya ba'aba said, which we learned in the previous perek. The Amr Rav Chiya ba'aba, Amr Rav Yechanan, minayin l'dam kodshim she'eni machshu. How do we know that blood of kodshim is not machshu food l'kabel tumma if it touches it? Unlike usually the shiva mashkim touch food, then they make it susceptible to becoming tumma. And blood is one of the shiva mashkim. Yad Shochat Dam is the way to remember them. You have Yayin, which is wine, Shemen, oil. Yayin, Dam, wine and blood. Shochat is Shemen, Cholav, and Tal. Oil, milk, and dew. The dam is dvash and mayim, honey and water. Those are the shiva mashkim. So any of those touch food, then they make it susceptible to becoming tameh. But Rav Chiya ba'aba tells us that the blood of kodshim is not like that. And how do we know that not? Shenema, lo yisechlenu ala oretz tishpachenu kamoyim. Because the pasuk says, don't eat the blood, pour it, spill it out on the ground like water, from which we learn, dam shenishbach kamayim machshu, only blood which is spilled out on the ground like water, meaning that you don't bother doing anything specific with it, only that is machshu, she'enu nishbach kamayim, but blood that is not spilled out like water, where you catch it in a bowl and apply it to the mizbeach, enu machshu, such blood is not machshu l'kabel tumma. So according to Chizkiyah, that's what the hekesh is doing for us. Tosfos actually pointed out before, you know, when you get down to it, when you shecht a wild animal or a bird, you also don't just spill out the blood randomly because you have to do kisi adam on it. But the fact is, you don't collect it in a basin. You do allow it to fall on the ground. You just afterwards, you make sure it's more or less in one place so you can do kisi adam. Unlike the blood of kodshim, where you keep it in one place, you actually catch it in a basin, in a mizruk. So that's the pasuk is implying that such blood is not machshul l'kabel tumma. It's not considered like water in that sense. Well, if you don't catch it in a mizruk, it's possible to put on the mizbeach anyway, yeah. Okay. Even Rabbi Yehuda, who says you can collect it, is only talking about if it's spilled on the ground from the mizruk. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees if it goes directly from the neck of the animal onto the ground, then it's possible, yeah. Okay. Next. So we've taken care of according to both Rav Abahu and Chizkiyah. According to Rav Abahu, we learn from the hekesh between blood and water that blood is mutar b'hana. According to Chizkiya, we don't need that because already it's multibana since it doesn't say lo yeochol. And the Hekesh comes to teach us rather about blood of kodshim not being machshel the kabel tumah. Okay. Next, v'harei eva menachai. What about the case of eva menachai, which you're not allowed to eat? B'chdiv lo yseuchol anefesh emabon. So the pasuk says you're not allowed to eat when the soul is still in the body. Meaning, this is where we learn the issue of eva menachai. And it is, by the way, also to Bnei Noach, because in Parashas Noach, when the Eibishah gives when gives Noach the mitzvahs after the Mabul, he tells him Ach Bosta B'Nafshei Domei Leisichelu, that you are not allowed to eat from an animal while its life is still in it, meaning also Eiv Menachai. Vitanya, yet we learn, so again, according to Rabbi Bohu's rule, Eiv Menachai should be also B'Hana. But Vitanya, yet we learn in a brisa, Rab Nosson Omer, Minayin Shtalo Yoshit Adam Kos Yain L'Nozer. How do we know that a person shouldn't hand a cup of wine to a Nozer who's also to drink it? The Eva Menachai Levnei Noach, and he's also not allowed to hand an Eva Menachai to a Ben Noach because he would be causing him to do an Isser. Tamad Lomer Velifne Iva Loisitin Michel. Therefore, the Pasuk says you're not allowed to cause a blind person to stumble, which means, in other words, it doesn't mean the literal sense to not put a brick or something in front of somebody. It means that you're not allowed to give, among other things, it means that you're not allowed to, you're not allowed to abet a person in doing an avera, implying hala klavim shori. So the implication is, though, the fact that the Torah has to tell you can't give it to, the fact that Rav Nosson has to tell us that you can't give it to the goy implies you could give it to a dog. So in other words, it's mutar b'hana. That's hana because it's your dog. It's your dog, for example. Yeah. In fact, actually, Tosfos brings over here from the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that actually we're talking about the Eiv Menachai itself belongs to the goy. But the point is, let's say, for example, the goy wanted to hire you to hand it to him. Let's say, for example, you have the case the Gemara talks about over there. Suppose you're on opposite sides of the river. He can't get to the Eiv Menachai himself, so he's willing to pay you a couple of dollars if you put it on a pitchfork and hand it to him across the river. You're not allowed to do that because of Lifnei Iver. But if you have the same kind of thing, if the goy's Eiv Menachai, and he wants to give it to his dog who's on the other side of the river, and he tells you, I'll give you a couple of bucks if you hand it to my dog, you would be allowed to do that. So you see, in other words, that's mutar b'hana, and you're allowed to get paid for giving it. So now again, according to Rabbi Bohu's rule, why? If it's also to eat, it should be also b'hana. The answer is shiny. Eiv Menachai de Itkash L'dam. The difference is that Eiv Menachai, there's a hekish between it and blood. And blood, we just said before, there's a hekish between it and water, that's mutter. By the way, the Gemara tells us in Zvachim, when it comes to Kodshim, specifically, you have a rule that you can't learn Lomid min Alomid. If you learn Halacha number two from number one through a hekish, then you can't then take from number two and learn something from number three also through a hekish. That won't work. But when it comes to other areas of the Torah, you can do that. So we can have, there's a hekish between water and blood, which means that blood is mutar b'hana. Then there can be a hekish between blood and Eiv Menachai, and Eiv Menachai is also mutar b'hana. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says, Rak chazak levilti achol adam, be strong not to eat the blood, which Rashi on the pasuk mentions two possibilities why it needs to say be strong. One of them is that the Jewish people at that time were in fact addicted to eating blood. It was something they had picked up in Mitzrayim, I guess, or something. And therefore the Torah has to warn them very strongly to break that habit. The other possibility, Rashi says, is fakir. A normal person would be repulsed by eating blood. And still the Torah is saying you have to be so careful to hold back not to, how much more so other things where a person has a bigger taiva for that a person has to hold back as Yetzer Hara with those. Anyway, the point is the pasuk says Rak chazak levilti achol adam, be strong not to eat the blood. Ki hadam hu hanafesh, because the blood is the life of the animal. So we see, in other words, that the Torah is making a comparison, and the Torah says, and the end of that pasuk is lois secha nefesh amabaser that we quoted before. So we see that there's a hekish between blood in the first half of the pasuk and hanefesh amabaser, which is eiv menachai in the second half of the pasuk. So that hekish tells us, just as blood is mutter, as we established before, so is eiv menachai mutter b'hana, that is. Again, the question is, nu, according to Chizkiya, who says that Eivim and Achai should be mutter b'hana even without that, because, again, according to him, there's nothing to tell us that it should be osa b'hana. It doesn't say by Eivim and Achai lo ye ochel, just as lo soichel. So according to him, why do you need the hekesh? The answer is amalach. So he says the hekesh goes the other way. Damhu de'itkesh le'evim and achai. Just the opposite. The hekesh is meant to teach you something the other way around. Once you know that something about evim and achai is mutter, or something that evim and achai is osir, you need to also know that there's a similar issue by blood. Ma evim and achai osir, just like evim and achai is osir to eat. Af dam min achai osir, the same thing. Blood from a living creature, from a living animal, is osir with the relevant issue, namely koris. In other words, you shouldn't think that you shouldn't think, in other words, the pasuk is telling you that you're not allowed to eat blood, but a few psukim earlier it talks about where you're shechting an animal. So maybe only blood from shchita should be osir and chayev kares. Maybe other kinds of blood should not. Therefore, just the opposite. The Torah is telling you a hekesh between eiv and achai and blood. Eiv and achai is osir, regardless. Therefore, dam and achai is also osir and chayev kares. The Ezeh, what kind of blood from a living creature is a person? Chayev Kodesh, Zedam HaKoza, Sha'nefesh Yotzebo, this means blood from bloodletting of an animal, where the nefesh goes out with it. Rashi brings from Gemara and Chrysos that there are several stages when you let blood from an animal, there's various stages of how the blood comes out. First it dribbles out, then it comes out as a big stream, the gush, then it starts getting darker, eventually it starts dribbling again. So a certain one is damsha neshama yotzebo, that the life force of the animal goes out with that, meaning if you didn't stop it bleeding, then it would end up dying from loss of blood. Yeah, the Gemara discusses over there whether it's dafka the second one or maybe the first and second one, whatever. There's different opinions. Not the first one, I think the second or third one. There's different opinions in the Gemara over there, but the point is there is a dam hakoza, and therefore so Chizkiya says, without the hekesh with Eivim and Achai, you would never know that such blood is Chai of Koris. The Torah is telling you, just like Eivim and Achai is also, so is Dam min Achai. But not to tell us that either of them is also Bana, because again, according to Chizkiya, there's no reason to say either one of them is also Bana. Doesn't say Lo Yeh Ochel by either one of them. Doesn't say Lo Yeh Ochel by blood, it says Lo Yeh Chlanu. Doesn't say Eivim and Achai, doesn't say Lo Yeh Ochel either. It also says Levilti it says Lo Yeh Ochel and Nefesh Amabasa. So by neither one does it say Lo Yeh Ochel, which Chizkiya had said that's what we need by Chometz to tell us that it's also Bana, therefore they're Mutter Bana. So the Hekesh is not coming to tell us anything about being Mutter Bana, the Hekesh is coming to tell us that Dam Min Achai is also and Chai of Kodesh.
Lo Yeh Chlanu is very close to Lo Yeh Ochel. I mean,
Loy Sochal is not very close to Loy Yeochel. Loy Yeochel means it shall not be eaten, meaning there's no hana you're allowed to have from it that could conceivably bring to anything that you would be allowed to eat. Meaning even if you have a chain of things, you have hana, let's say, from this thing. Namely that, let's say, for example, you use it as firewood, and therefore that saves you money on firewood, and now you're able to use that money to go and buy food and eat it, that would be hana that brings to eating. Because it says lo yeh ochel by chometz is why Chizkiya says you're not allowed to do that by chometz. All these other things that we're discussing so far, it never says lo yeh ochel. It says lo soichal, don't eat it, or lo soichal, don't eat, lo seichlen nu, don't eat it, etc. All of those mean, according to Chizkiya, just eating, not hana.
There are many other examples in the Shas where we use the sheresh to make a similarity, and here we don't.
When we're talking about a Gzeira Shava, yes, sometimes we do that, but here we're not making a Gzeira Shava. Here Chizkiya is telling us a general rule that unless it says lo yeh ochel, the Torah is telling us it's only also to eat, not also b'hana. And that's how it is over here with blood, among others. Okay. Next, v'arei shor haniskal. What about the case of a shor that has to be stoned because it killed somebody? Here it does say ye ochel, like by chametz. It says its flesh shall not be eaten, which even according to Chizkiya implies an isur hana. V'tanya, yet we learn in a brisa. Mimashma shenema, that the brisa is going to tell us that we learn the isur hana in a different way. So the question is going to be, why do we need that if we have lo ye ochel? Dirachmana ama lo ye ochel, sorry. The pasuk says, its flesh shall not be eaten. V'tanya, and we learn in a b'raisa, mimash mashenema sokol ye sokol asher. Since already the pasuk tells us that the ox has to be stoned, eli yadeshi nevela, wouldn't that automatically make it nevela? Because it hasn't been shechted. U nevela asur b'achila. And we know already from elsewhere in the Torah that you're not allowed to eat nevela. Uma tamad lema lo ye ochel. So why does the Torah need to say that it shall not be eaten? It means magid l'chakol. So if the pasuk wants to tell you shim shechted la'achar shenigmar es dinoi, that suppose you shechted it after the gmar din. So based in paskin, that yes, we have eidos, we have all the evidence that we need for this ox to be executed, and then somebody were to go and shecht it, also then that it would be also b'hana. That's what the pasuk is telling you. So in other words, the pasuk is telling you sokol yisokol asher. The shur has to be stone. And even if, instead of stoning it, you went and shechted it, no good. Lo ye'ochos p'sarei, you're not allowed to eat the meat of it. Sokol yisokol, the fascist is just the style of the Torah. Dibur Torah Koloshim Re'adam. But, yeah. Anyway. Ainli elabachila continues the braisa. Now, from the words lo ye'ochol, you would only know that you also have to eat the meat of it. Again, in this case, where you shechted it instead of stoning it, then we're saying it's also to eat. Well, that's the question. That's what we have to figure out. Bahana minayin. How do we know that's also bahana? Now, the Braisa does not say that it's also bahana automatically because it says lo ye'ochol. So how does it work according to Chizkiyah? And according to Rabbi Boho, it's even worse because according to him, just the fact that any kind of lashon achila would mean it's also bahana. But the Braisa instead gives a different way. Tamad loyma uval asher noki. The pasuk therefore continues, the owner of the ox is clean. Now, one second. So Gemara asks, my mashma, where do you see from the words of Baal Asher Noki that it's also b'hana? Now, the simple meaning is, in other words, the ox is being stoned, but the owner is not chayiv misa. The owner is not chayiv misa or kofer or whatever. But the expression of Baal Asher Noki, Shimon ben Zoymar, ka'odem sha'oim alachaveira, it's like the expression when people say, yotze ploini noki min achosav, ploini went out clean from his nachosim. Like we say in English, he was cleaned out. The ain loy behem hanah shall call me, has no hanah from them. So the words uval asher noki teach us that the owner of the ox is cleaned out. He has no ability to have hanah from this ox. So again, there was gmar din, then he went, whether he went and shechted it, or whether they went and did skila with it, as the case may be, either way, the meat of it is also b'hanah. So we know it only because it says uval asher noki. So that's the question. Taima de kosev uval asher noki. Only because it says uval asher noki are we saying that he's not allowed to have hana. De'i milo ye'ochol isra achila mashma, isra hana le mashma. Apparently the implication is that if it said only lo ye'ochol and it didn't say uval asher noki, you would be also to eat it, but you would be mutter to have hana. How does that fit according to Chizkiyah? And how does that fit according to Rabbo? Because the fact that if it didn't say, that only because it says uval asher noki, are we saying it's also b'hana? The word noki, Rav Shimon ben Zoymer is teaching us, means also b'hana. In other words, if it hadn't said that, if the pasuk had just said, sokol yisokol asher v'lo ye'ochol, sorry, we would have thought it's mutter b'hana. Now, according to Chizkiyah, why? It says lo ye'ochol. And according to Rabbi Bahu, why? It says a loshen of achila. Why do we need the word uval asher noki to teach us the same thing? No, forget that. We're saying, the drosha that we're saying, uval asher noki, teaches us that he's also b'hana, but that already we know from the word lo ye'ochol. To tell us that he's not chayiv anything else, obviously there's no reason to be chayiv him anything else, the Torah says it. No, that's by mu'ad, he's chayiv kofer. By mu'ad, he's chayiv kofer. By tom, the pasuk doesn't say any such thing. Actually, we're gonna take that point back up soon, but, The whole pasuk goes like this, right? An ox gores a man or a woman and they die. Soko yisokol asher, the ox should be stoned. V'lo ye'ochol, sorry, the meat of it cannot be eaten. Uval asher noki, the owner of the ox is noki. So we're saying the word noki teaches us it's also b'hana. But why do you need that when already the word lo ye'ochol should teach us it's also b'hana? On the simple meaning of the pasuk, yeah, it means, in other words, that unlike by the case of a mu'ad, where he has to pay kofer, here the pasuk is saying that not. But on a drosha level, we don't need that. If the Torah tells us in the next pasuk what he has to do if the ox is mu'ad, where then it says v'gamba all of yumas and he pays kefil, or not kefil, kofer he pays. So over here, there's no reason to think that he should have to pay anything. So why does it say u'bala shon noki? It's coming for the drosha to teach us that it's also b'hana. But why do we need that if lo ye'ochol automatically means it's also b'hana? The answer is, la'olam lo ya'ochol isra achila ve'isra hana'a mashma. No, as a matter of fact, the word lo ya'ochol does teach us the isra hana'a, like Chizkiya says, and like Rav Abahu says. Uvala shonoki lahanas ure hudasa. The word noki, though, comes to teach us he's also not allowed to have hana'a from the skin of the animal. Now, why do we need that? Ve'itzra, so that we need. Sakhdat ha'mina, lo ya'ochol as psara iksib. After all, the pasuk says you're not allowed to eat its flesh. Psara ein orei loy. Maybe you're not allowed to eat or have hana'a from the flesh, but you're allowed to have hana'a from the skin. So therefore, kamash malan, therefore, the words of vala shonaki teach us that he's not allowed to have hana'a from the skin of the animal either. Okay, the question then is, okay, so far so good, but We do have a drasha that uses the word uvala shonoki to teach us a different thing, namely ulahanach tanoi. What about those tanoim in Bava Kamma? Demapkile lahaykra ledrasha achrina. They use the word uvala shonoki to teach us different dinim, namely lachatsi koifer, that we shouldn't say. Now we know with a tam versus a muad, an ox that's tam or muad, when it comes to nizikim. A tam, you pay chafi nezek, and a muad, you pay three or more times, you pay nezek shalim. Now, here the Torah is telling you by a shom muad, if the ox killed three different people, then the owner has to pay koifer as well, has to pay a monetary amount. The Gemara discusses over there whether it's his own monetary value, whether it's the monetary value of the person that was killed, the may mazik, may nezek, whatever. The point is, he has to pay koifer. How do we know that he doesn't have to pay chatzi koifer if the ox was a tam? So some tanoim are learning that from the word of ala shonoki. It doesn't mean that he's cleaned out, that he's also bana. It means he's noki, he's free from any further penalties besides having the ox stone. And uladmei v'lodis, they also say, we learn from it that if the ox caused a pregnant woman to miscarry, that you don't have to pay for vlodis. Unlike the Torah tells us, a little bit earlier in Parashas Mishpatim, that if people are fighting and one of them hits a pregnant woman and makes her miscarry, then he's chayav dmei vlodis. He's chayav to pay her husband the potential value of the children. So how do we know the same thing does not apply if an ox gores a pregnant woman? That again we're learning from Vala Shonaki. So according to them, Hanas Ode Minolahu. So according to them, how are they learning that the skin is also? Maybe in fact we would say the meat is also because lo ya'ochol as psari, but the skin should be mutter, because of Bala Shonaki, which before we said we're learning for the skin, they're using for different limudim. The answer is nafgalahu me es v'sorei. They learn it from the s in the pasuk. It says lo ya'ochol es v'sorei, means es hatofel v'sorei. The word s comes to include something which is secondary to the meat, namely the skin. Yeah. So the question is v'idach. What about the first opinion, who says that we have to learn from uvala shonoki that the skin is also bana? Why don't we say we can learn from s? The answer is s loy darish. He holds you don't darshin the word s in psukim. Kedetanya, as in fact we learn in a brisa, Shimon ha'amsuni, va'amilon Nechemya ha'amsuni, Shimon, or some say Nechemya ha'amsuni. Ha'amsuni could be the name of the place he's coming from, could be the type of work he did. Oimes means a burden, so maybe he carried burdens for a living, whatever it is. Famous piece, how Yadorish called Esim Shabbat Torah. He used to douch in every place in the Torah where it says S, he would douch in that it comes to include something else that's not written in the pasuk. And we have examples of such droshes in a number of places in Shas. For example, where it says Bereshis Bara Elokim Es Hashemayim Ve'Es Ha'aretz, it means Es Hashemayim L'Rabbetz Tzva'im Ve'Es Ha'aretz L'Rabbetz Tzva'eha, that it comes to include all the different things that populate Shemayim and all the different things that populate the Aretz. We shouldn't just think, in other words, the Eivishter created the heaven and the earth and everything else came about by themselves or by evolution or whatever. No, the Eivishter created all of them. So, Tzva'im means the stars and planets and Shemayim and the various creatures and whatever on earth, yeah. So it includes that. For example, what do you say? We say, for another example, when we douch in something from S, Tabit S, Avicha, V'es Imecha, that includes your older brothers and your older sisters. So, yeah. So Shimon Hamsuni, or Nechemya Hamsuni, was going through the entire Torah and douching it like that. Kivin Shigia La Es Hashem Alekecha Tira. Then he reached the pasuk Es Hashem Alekecha Yishtfir. Pirush, he stopped. How can you compare anything else to the fear of Hashem? And he went back on all of the ribuyim that he darshan, because he said, Rashi says, he figured, if that S can't possibly become the teacher and anything else, then neither can all the other Sim. Imagine, he spent all these years darshaning all these Sim, and now he's saying, forget about it, we can't darshan them anymore. We have to undo all those darushas. Because it means, in other words, once we have one where we can't darshan it, then automatically it means he's saying all the ones that I darshan until now, it was all based on a mistake. This shows what an ish emes he was. That the chachamim in general, we know, are people of emes. That the Torah is a Torah of emes. So yeah, he's not going to say, yeah, but I put in so much effort into it, I should at least keep the ones. No, if one is no good, then all of them are no good. So Talmidim said to him, Rebbe, kol esim shadarash tamatahelein. So what's going to happen with all the esim that you darshan until now? Amalem, he says, kishem shigibalti schara ladusha. Okay, just like up until now, I was receiving a reward from the Eibishter for darshaning them, because I was darshaning them in order to show that there's no extra words in the Torah, which is covered for Hashem. Akachani mekabal schara ladusha. I will also receive now reward from Hashem for staying away, because that's also for the honor of Hashem, to show that nothing else should be compared to the Yirah of Hashem. By the way, Marsha points out, why did he only have a problem with Es Hashem Elokecha Tira? What about V'ahavta Es Hashem Elokecha? And the answer is fine. Maybe you could say it comes to include that you should love Talmid HaChamim. But on the other hand, Moda, but Moda, even though, yeah, you're supposed to have Moda for your Rebbe, but that it should be compared to Moda Shemayim, that not. Ad Shabara Bakiva Vidorash and Tura Bakiva came in Daushin, Esa Shemala Kechatira, the Rabbis, Tamar Chachamim, that yes, it does come to include Tamar Chachamim as well, because Moda Rabbah, Moda Shemayim, like we say in Pirkei Avos, nevertheless, Shimon or Nechemya Hamsuni still didn't agree with that. He continued to hold that we can't Daushin the Essin in the Torah. So therefore, we end up with a Machlokas Tanoim. So there's the answer. So one opinion will say that we can darshan from es v'saroi, that would be Rabbi Akiva, that we can darshan the skin that of the shirt on niskol, that's also. The other opinion is going to say, like Shimon Hamsuni or Nechemya Hamsuni, that you can't darshan es. The word es is not coming to teach us anything special. Therefore, we need a different limud, that the skin is also, and that we have to learn, that we need from Uval Asher Noki. No, not from es, because he's saying you don't darshan es. Rabbi Akiva is going to darshan es. But he's saying you can't dash an S, and therefore you have to learn from Uvala Shonoki. There's a vote on that. I think it's actually from the Baal Shem Tov that says why Rabbi Akiva is specifically the one that darshaned it. We're going to learn later in the Masechta the famous thing of how when Rabbi Akiva was in Amma Oretz, he used to say, "I wish I could get a hold of a Talmud Chacham and I'd bite him like a donkey." So he had a total lack of respect in Yira for the Chachamim. So now when he eventually became a Talmud Chacham himself, then he was the one who specifically had to darshan that you have to have murder for Talmud Chachamim equal to the murder of Shemayim. And that'll help himself develop a greater yira for the Eibishter and for Tamar Chachamim. What do you mean? One is Ava, one is Ava, one's Yira. One's Ava, one's Yira. Shema Yisrael. No, there's no S in the word Shema Yisrael. We have to S Hashem Alekecha is what Marsha is focusing on, why Shimon Hamsuni didn't have a problem with that. And the answer is fine. Maybe you could say it means you should love a Talmud Chacham like you love the Eibishter. Fine, I have no problem with that. But Yira is not. There's in fact a mimer from the Alter Rebbe where he goes into this and explains the idea behind it is. And so it's a long maimon, and I didn't really fully understand it, but I think what he's saying is Ava comes from a distance. Usually we think of Ava as a closeness and Yira as a distance, but he explains in this maimon the other way around. You have Ava when you feel how distant you are from the Eibishter and you want to be close to him. So there it's appropriate to mention S, because like there's a certain tuffle, like you're there, you're the Yesha Oyev, and therefore you have to have Ava for the Eibishter. But Yira implies that you're already close to the Eibishter and you feel a fear of him. So what's the S? There's no S over there. There's no tuffle. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Bahari Orla. Okay, let's take another example of something which is also. So again, so the bottom line is, as far as Shor Nisko, even though it says Lo Ye Ochel, that wouldn't be enough all by itself to tell us that it's also Bahana, because we need to also know about the skin. The lo ye ochel by itself teaches us that it's also that the meat is also bahana, but we need uval asher noki, or we need s to teach us that the skin is also bahana. Yeah, which is right. Okay. What about vahare orla? What about when it comes to orla from a tree? Again, it uses the word lo ye'ochel. It shall not be eaten. V'tanya, yet we learn in a b'raisa, arelim lo ye'ochel. When it says the fruit has to be orla, it shall not be eaten. Ein li ela isur achila. From those words, you would only know that it's also to eat. Minayin shalo yehonim mimenu. How do we know you're not allowed to have hanah from it? V'shalo yitzva boi. For example, you're not allowed to use it for dye. V'lo yadlik b'raisa ner. You're not allowed to use it to light a lamp. So again, we're not saying because it says lo ye'ochel, we have to bring a pasuk. Tamad leimav ba'araltam or losay arelim lo ye'ochel. The rabbi says kolam. When it says three times in the pasuk, ba'araltam, you should make orla. Or losay, it's orla. Arelim, that's arelim. Lo ye'ochel. The rabbi says kolam. Those times when it says all those expressions of orla means that it's off limits. Orla, Rashi explains in several places, means like covered up. The orla on the body, for example, is called that because it covers up the end of the aver. So here it's covered up and off limits, but only because. So again, the point is time of the kas of rachmana ba'araltam or lase areilim. Only because it says repeatedly the word orla doesn't mean it's also b'hanah. Halav hachi havamin israchila mashma israhanah le mashma. If it's not for that, it means only israchila. Again, it's both the question on chizkiya and rabo. According to chizkiya, it says lo ya'ochol. According to rabo, it says any kind of achila. It should automatically be also b'hanah. Why does it need to repeat araltem and orlosai? The answer is la'olam lo ye'ochol mashma ben isra achila ben isra hana. Yes, the word lo ye'ochol does mean automatically isra hana, but the shiny hasim dichtiv lachem. But on the other hand, the reason why we need a special limud is because the pasuk says ye'lochem areilim. The word lachem means for you, so therefore you would think that it means it's mutar b'hana. So therefore, the pasuk. Lachem means for you. So it should, now usually, when we, no, just the opposite. Lachem, usually, when we have by something that's also, and it says lachem, means lachot sochecha, means you're allowed to use it for your various needs. You're not allowed to eat it, but you're allowed to have other hana from it. So here, we need, therefore, to stress that not. So for itzrich, so therefore we need like this. Savdan chamina hoil v'kos of lachem. Since the pasuk says ye lachem arevim, maybe that means shalachem yehei. It belongs to you, and you're allowed to use it for various purposes. Kamash malan. So therefore the pasuk wants to tell us by saying v'araltem or losay, and saying that no, you're not allowed to have enough of it. Don't use the word lachem over here to think that it means that it's mutar b'hana. In fact, it's also b'hana. So that's the question. So after all that it does say v'araltem, what are we doing with the word lachem? The answer is l'chiratanya. That comes to teach us a different din. Lachem l'rabas es anatur l'rabim. The word lachem, which is in plural, comes to include a tree that you planted for the purpose of the rabim. Actually, not well. So Rashi explains. Let's say you planted it in the middle of the road, so anybody who is walking by that road can pick fruit from it. Tosfos said that no, it doesn't mean necessarily in the middle of the road. It just means you planted it for the purpose of the rabbim. You want that the rabbim, wherever it is located, that the rabbim should be able to come and pick fruit from it. So the word lochem comes to include, even though it's lochem, it's for you plural, it still has the din of orla. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda and Melahoitzias and a true rabbim. Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around. The word lochem comes to exclude a tree that was planted for the rabbim. According to Rabbi Yehuda, such a tree is potter from orla. So the word lachem is teaching us one or the other of those things, according to the Chachamim or Rabbi Yehuda, respectively. So let's figure out, by the way, my time at the Tanakhama. Why does the Tanakhama say the word lachem includes a tree that was planted for the rabbim? Dichtiv, because already the pasuk says unatap tem, because when the pasuk says you plural should plant, now that automatically means leyochid mashma. That means only an individual is planting, because usually you don't have rabbim planting a tree together. Usually every person plants a tree individually. So if it says unatap tem, leyochid mashma lerabbim leymashma, that would imply that orla only applies to a tree planted by an individual, not for the rabbim. No, tatem is lashon yachid, but the point is, when it's, on the other hand, it means each individual Jew, when you collectively Jews, each of you individually plant a tree, then it's also for the first 3 years. But maybe but how would you know rabbim? Kaser rachman alachem lahavi esanetu alarabim. Therefore, the pasuk is lachem that even if it's something for the that even if it's planted for the sake of the rabbim, it's also for the first 3 years. There, Rabbi Yehuda, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around. Unatatem mashma bein rabbim bein leyochid. After all, the word unatatem means it's plural, so it means even if rabbim together are planting a tree. V'lochem bein yochid bein rabbim mashma. Again, the word lochem also means whether one individual or many people. and have a ribui achar ribui. So therefore, you have a ribui after a ribui, both times where it says you plural, and we have the usual wolf, and ribui achar ribui, el olamai. So just the opposite, it comes to be mamayit, that not where it's planted for the sake of the rabbin, in the middle of the road, as Rashi says, or just in general, for the rabbin, as Tosfos says. So that's where Rabbi Yehuda gets that it's potter from orla, because it's said in a tat tem, which already means plural, and then lachem also means plural, so the double ribui makes a mute, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Whereas according to the Chum, it's not a double ribui, because the first unatatem is not including the rabbin at all, it's just meant each of you individually when you plant a tree. No, everybody agrees the word natata means plural, but the chachamim are saying that it can't mean plural, because you usually don't have many people plant a tree together. You usually have one person plants a tree. So necessarily, unatatem means when each of you individually plants a tree after you come into Eretz Yisrael. And then the word lachem comes to teach you that even though it's for the rabbim, it's still also. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, the word onatatim can mean many people planting a tree together. And lachem also means meaning a tree planted for many people. And therefore, you have a ribu yacharibu. The point is, in other words, again, because we have that word lachem, and we would have misunderstood that the word lachem teaches us as mutar bahana, as the word lachem often does, and instead we're using it for Rabbi Yehuda's derasha or the Chachamim's derasha, therefore we need to say va'araltam or losa. If it weren't for all of that, if it hadn't had to say the word lachem, then it wouldn't have had to say va'araltam or losa either, and we would have automatically known that it's also bahana because it says lo ye'ochel. It's not a matter of chalal prata. There's no chalal prata here yet. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with more examples of that, more examples of things where the Torah tells us that something is also to eat, and we see it's mutar b'hana, and figure out how that works according to Chizkiyah and how that works according to Rabbi Bahu. So Rabbi Yehuda would hold exactly that orla does not apply to a tree planted for the rabbim. You are allowed to eat from it the fruit the first 3 years. There are other examples, by the way. Even the Chachamim agree there are certain cases. For example, the first Mishnah in Orla mentions, for example, if you planted a tree, let's say, for example, to serve as to close up a hole in your fence, then even if it grows fruit, you're allowed to eat that fruit. And a tail of siog or the kurdus or whatever, then the fruit is not subject to the dinim of Orla. It's only subject to the dinim of Orla if you planted it for the purpose of a fruit tree. That's in the Chosid's garden, the tzlaf over there, so maybe the same thing. I don't know, it's a good question, since it was there in order to close up a gap. Could be, I don't know.